A couple years ago, writer Catherine Schultz moved to Portland, Oregon for a little bit. One day, she lost her car keys, then her house keys. Then she left her sweater in a cafe, went back, retrieved it, but left her wallet behind. Got that, later left it at the bike store where she was buying a bike lock, which she lost the next day, just before losing the truck that she parked somewhere. Well, then, Catherine Schultz lost her father. In her piece in The New Yorker, Catherine Schultz writes about loss, the researched kind. Did you know the average person loses 200,000 things by the age of 60? We spend 50 million hours looking for them. And then she writes about the kind of loss for which there is no possibility of being found. Her piece is titled Losing Streak, Two Seasons of Loss, and she joins us now to talk about it. And Catherine, first of all, we are so sorry for the loss of your dad.
Yeah, thank you. That's so kind of you to say. Yes, we lost him this past September. Yeah. So it, you know, some days it feels like yesterday. Some days it feels like a little time is going by. But obviously, it's omnipresent.
Yeah. Well, but before you land us there, the loss of death, this foreign land. You write, when your father was dying, for your family, it was like trying to dress every morning for the weather in a nation we'd never heard of. But before that, take us to the beginning of your journey to what Patti Smith calls that half-dimensional place where things disappear, you know, where you had us laughing, you know, about what is wrong with you losing keys. And by the way, I left out that when you finally find the truck, you realize your cell phone is back at the bookstore with the other new arrivals. What were you thinking when you were losing all of this?
The funny thing is, I'm not normally the losing type. I think there are these people, I know there are these people for whom losing things is so commonplace that it's not worthy of remarking on, let alone expending the kind of energy necessary to write half an article about it. But I'm usually fairly organized, and I just had one of these kind of sprees of losing track of things. Now, I think part of that was because I was living in a different place. We aren't really that organized. We're just systematic. We, you know, put our keys in the same place, and so you don't, you know where to go looking for them. So some of it, I think, was just kind of spatial dislocation. I was just having a little sparring match with the universe, apparently.
Well, you
things
were.
Didn't go my way for a while.
And joining everybody else, because as you found out, we spend 54 million hours looking for things like keys and glasses. We spent a lot of money, $30 billion in 1 year on cell phones alone. You know, some people think there's a psychological component, like Freud wrote The Psychopathology of Everyday Life. He said there was a powerful motive for things that we've lost. His contemporary Abraham Arden Brill, you write, said, we never lose what we highly value, which makes us feel so guilty because, well, sometimes we do, you know, and you'd hate to think that it's like you have some weird underlying motive.
You know, on the whole, I think the reality is we, a lot of us, lead very busy, very distracted, very distractible lives. And, you know, the kind of positive way of looking at it is like, oh my gosh, we walk out of these hectic situations with 99% of our belongings with us. It's not so bad, actually. But when the 1% is your cell phone, it's a really annoying day.
Or your cell phone, your keys, and your glasses.
Sure, exactly.
Well, there are also people who were trying to help. There's the 18-inch rule. What's the 18-inch rule?
Well, you know, let's put rule in scare quotes because I personally am rather suspicious of its, you know, robustness. but there's a common theory out there among people who think about losing material objects. Your first instinct about where to go look is usually the right one, and whatever it is you're looking for is probably within just a couple of feet of where that was. Now, we've all had that experience. You go and you look in a drawer and it's not there, and you spend 15 minutes turning the house upside down and the thing was in the drawer all along. So I don't want to suggest that it's not a very reasonable thing to try when you've lost something, but I think rule might be overstating the case a little.
Those devices that you can put on things, first of all, you have to remember to put it on the thing you're looking for, and then you have to be able to find the remote device that looks for the thing. There's websites to help you find pets, for instance. In fact, our Peter O'Dowd read your article and was thinking about loss and his dog getting lost and websites, and he did a piece on it. We'll link people to that. But you quote the wonderful Elizabeth Bishop poem, One Art, and she kind of posits that maybe losing little things like keys and glasses is like a warm-up.
Yeah, it's funny. I thought so much about that poem while I was writing this piece. I mean, obviously, in some ways, the poem kind of provides the template for the essay that I wrote, in that, you know, both of them start with these kind of trivial losses or loss of physical objects and then widen out into real existential loss. And I love Elizabeth Bishop, but I go back and forth on that poem. I think it's a work of genius. But to the question of whether you know, small losses prepare us for large ones. No, I think she's wrong about that, and I think she knows that it's very deliberate. It's very coy. It's essentially a poem about denial, I think, kind of denial of the big losses. On the other hand, I think she's exactly right to suggest that loss isn't a series of one-off incidents. It's an entire climate. It's the reality of the world in which we live. It's lovely and moving and brilliant.
Well, I'll read just a few stanzas. The art of losing isn't hard to master. So many things seem filled with the intent to be lost that their loss is no disaster. Lose something every day. Accept the fluster of lost door keys, the hour badly spent. Then practice losing farther, losing faster. Places and names and where it was you meant to travel. None of these will bring disaster. And of course, as she goes on, you know, disaster does come to all of us at some point when we lose, as you did, your father.
You know, like Elizabeth Bishop, I knew I was yoking together very different kind of losses. It's a strange thing. I mean, I hope a little bit of this comes through in the piece, but my father just had a remarkable sense of humor. He was an incredibly funny man and made everyone around him laugh and had a wonderful laugh. And so it was actually a real pleasure for me to feel like I could start this piece in this really kind of comedic sort of, you know, oh my goodness, aren't human beings and myself in particular ridiculous mode, and then let it become what it was, which was an elegy.
Yeah, very much so. And you try to poke at that place. Look, just an anecdote. You know, when my mother died, my brother came into the room, sang If You Were the Only Girl in the World and Climb Every Mountain, and then she died, like that. And we're all crowding around with people who couldn't be there on cell phones, trying, you know. And someone yelled out, take me with you. And it was me. Because I couldn't imagine my mother making this trip by herself. These aren't key. This isn't. You try to get at the finality.
It's both the most kind of obvious and banal truth about death, and truly the hardest one to wrap your mind around. It is absolute. It is binary, and there is no following someone there. And there is, you can walk up to the threshold of it. You can watch it happen. You can be fortunate enough to be, you know, in the presence of your loved ones as they are approaching that threshold, but you're going to get stopped at the door, and it's, you know, we're never writing about death. We're writing about loss. We're writing about grief. You can't write about death, at least in any kind of phenomenological first-person way. So all I could do was grapple with the shock of losing someone in a way that, yes, is absolutely unfindable. They're just gone. And that is so simple and straightforward and fundamental to death. And yet, when you are going through it, it is absolutely astonishing. I still, literally probably once a day, have the moment of, I can't believe my father's here. And I don't even mean that in the grief-stricken way. I mean, in a bad moment, it'll bring you to your knees. But in an everyday moment, it truly is just bafflement. Like, I can't believe he's not here. Like, this just seems strange. It seems, who designed the world this way? This seems insane.
You could always find the keys. I mean, you know, there is, obviously, they're not at all alike, but there's that sense. And you write, you go looking.
Yeah, I was very, I expected after his death to somehow hear from him or feel him or just, you know, have him be present. And in fact, no, death just like went on being death, which is implacable, and the absence of being able to feel someone or hear them or reach out and have them reach back. And again, it shouldn't be a shock. It's what we all know and understand about death. I shouldn't say all. Obviously, some people do have the kind of deep faith that sustains them with a sense that people are still there, still watching, but I do not. And nonetheless, it was shocking to feel as bereft as I did and to feel that his absence was as total as it was.
Yet you write about having a sense of maybe, what did you call it, a reverse savings account in which we are eventually robbed of everything. Our dreams and plans and jobs and knees and backs and memories, the childhood friend, the husband of 50 years, the father of forever, the keys to the house, the keys to the car, the keys to the kingdom itself.
Truly, the nature of life is that it is a series of losses, and I don't mean to suggest we don't also have tremendous, incredible finds. You lose everything. I mean, that's it. That ultimately, although I believe that, I couldn't quite rest in that place. I also cherish life, and my father was a great connoisseur of life, and I couldn't, in his honor, quite rest in that dark of a place.
Well, you write, disappearance reminds us to notice, to cherish.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, there is a kind of being startled into hyper-awareness, a wonderful spur to gratitude and to appreciating what we do have in the most active way possible.
I love the last line. We are here to keep watch, not to keep. Catherine Schultz, her essay, Losing Streak, Reflections on Two Seasons of Loss, in The New Yorker. We'll link it at hereandnow.org. Catherine, thank you so much.
You are so very welcome.
And it is a great read. Give yourself a treat.